Well, this is it. I'd like to, first of all, put this kind of in the right perspective, since I'm speaking about my personal experience. And it took me in many curves into psychology and different areas, none of which I'm an expert, that I'm going to speak about them in the context of my experience. So if I make mistakes or misrepresentations, I know many of you have degrees in different fields, feel free to bring it up. But I would like to wait until the end. I'm trying, it's kind of a cohesive thing I'm trying to do. And I timed it with my husband yesterday, but we should have a good half hour left for everybody expressing their own, you know, maybe sharing their own experiences and whatever questions they might have. So I'll start with a couple stories because they're kind of the basis for everything I studied. Shortly after we started to meditate about 7 years ago, I usually do it as soon as I get up in the morning. I'm sitting there in our guest room trying to meditate, I don't know, 6:30 in the morning, when suddenly started getting very nauseous. And I thought, oh boy, you know, I ate something yesterday. I tried to ignore it, but it got really bad. So I stopped, and I went in the kitchen, and I told my husband, I think I have indigestion. And he said, lie down a little bit. So I did. It went away like that. I go, oh, good. I go back to the room to meditate. And it just came back with a fury. You know, I mean, I was just heaving, you know. So I thought, okay, something is going on here. But I didn't like it, so I stopped. And I talked to Stanton about it. And he said, well, I read in Thomas Keating's book, things can come up. I go, well, something's coming up, you know. Anyway, and then during the day, it was staying with me. I go, what could possibly be coming up? You know, I'm a very happy person here, you know. And I remember then, 7 years before, at the Wake Center, I had gone to a workshop of Judy Orloff. She's a psychiatrist from Los Angeles who wrote an excellent book on intuition. And I go, oh, intuition, that sounds good. And midway through the workshop, she was about to dismiss us for lunch. She said, before you go, let's center ourselves. I'll do a little guided meditation. And she, I had never meditated in my life, and I just thought that was a little new agey. Things are getting a little weird here. And so I was already thinking of my grocery list and what to do for lunch, but I kept hearing her voice. And suddenly, I started feeling really nauseous. And I go, oh, cute, now, you know, I'm sick for the rest of the day. And then she goes, okay, you can go to lunch now, but let me ask you one question. She goes, anyone have a little nausea or anything? And I just suddenly listen to her, and I go, what? And about a dozen women raise their arm. And I go, wow. I mean, that just blew my mind. And then she said, just very briefly, well, that's pretty normal. Women store their pains in the guts. And it's from the guts they come up. So I go, wow, I had never heard that. I called Stanton up and I said, you gotta come, this girl actually knows what she's doing, you know? So now years later, I'm meditating and I'm back there, so at least I know now it's connected to the meditation and I'm gonna go for the ride. So you can't control this, it comes when it comes. So I don't know how many days later, this time I'm sitting upstairs in my studio, and all of a sudden it comes, and it came really hard. I mean, I was just so sick. And then I started passing out, and I passed out. And I don't know, could have been seconds, it could have been minutes, I have no idea. And afterwards, nothing, absolutely no sign of discomfort, and I felt pretty darn good, actually. And, you know, not to tell you now, you must be thinking she's encouraging us to meditate instead of calm. Well, there's a happy ending, and it came the next day. I wake up in the morning, and you know, when you come right out of sleep, I became aware of an intense joy. And my reaction was, what are you so happy about? You know? And I start thinking, is anything happening today? You know, you're not quite nothing. It was absolutely the same all day. And then I go, oh, but now I get to meditate. And boom, that old joy just literally at the heart level started to just palpate. You know, I mean, it was just really palpable. And the thought came to me, you haven't felt this way since you were a tiny little girl and the gypsies came to the village once a year with a merry-go-round on the village fair day. And I used to go and ride this stationary bike the whole day, and I felt in heaven. I couldn't sleep all night at the thought of that. So that's the thought that occurred to me, that this joy was similar to what I had as a little child. Voila. So I didn't know what to make out of that. I decided, okay, I need to learn a little bit here, you know. And I signed up with Adolf Ed. When I saw the title to this one class, Consciousness, Science, and Spirituality, I go, that suits me. I like those three things. Like Joanne, I like to make sense out of things. And that appealed to me. Plus, the teacher is phenomenal. And I thought, he's going to help me here and stand on this. And he did. And a little ways into his classes, he announced one day, oh, he goes, I'm going to do something special. I haven't done it in a while, through Adult Ed, and it's an adventure in consciousness. Well, at that time, I was still trying to figure out what the heck is consciousness. I really didn't have a feel for it. So I thought, okay, an adventure sounds good. Maybe now I'll get it, you know? So I went, and this is all done in Adult Ed. You bring your pillows, something to be comfortable. He gives you kind of a menu, what he's trying to do. And then you all lie down and you listen to him, and he just gives you little pointers. It's guided meditation with just a few pointers. And so I'd like to share with you one of those experiences because it fits into everything I'm going to talk about. And he started saying simply, you're in a special natural place, and you just let your left brain a little bit out of the meditation as much as you can, and you let the creative part of you kind of speak to you. What came to me was a desert, a beautiful flat desert, and I'm standing there alone in this desert looking around, and then I see a mound, like a rock sticking out, and I walked toward it, and there was a blanket lying on it. I grabbed the blanket and I put it around me, and then I started to walk just through the desert, and I come to a lake, and I felt compelled to go on the other side. So I started walking across the lake. When I came on the other side, there was a big tree, and the tree had a hole in it. And I entered this hole, and it led into a cave. The cave was dark, and it had steps going down, so I went down all those steps. And at the bottom, I look around. It's fairly dark, but you can see. And there were stalagmites and stalactites and a big, wide river running through it. Wide, but shallow. And the river was full of rocks. Rocks were sticking out. And I just decided to go in this river. And I walked around, and I see one rock. I don't know why. I felt I had to pick it up. Pick up this rock, come out of the river, carry it up the steps, and come outside. I come out onto a meadow, a beautiful meadow. And I walk around with my rock, and I find a spot that appealed to me, sat down, put the rock in front of me, and I looked at it, and all of a sudden I became aware of this deer walking up to me. And the deer started to lick me. It licked my arms, it licked my neck, it licked my face. And then I grabbed my blanket and wrapped it around me again. The stone was sitting in front of me. I'm sitting kind of cross-legged on the floor. On the grass, and I start making a fire on the rock. And the deer curls up next to me, and very snugly, like my cat did. And after the fire went out, the deer just kind of gently walked away. And then I picked up my rock, and I start walking, and I see a path. I follow this path along, and at some point, the path started going uphill, and it leads up a mountain. So I look at the top of the mountain, and there's a structure there, and it looks rather beautiful. And it's round; it has a round domed roof kind of over it. And so I take with my rock, I start going up. But gosh, it was so heavy; I couldn't carry this thing anymore. So I figured this is not working. I got to leave this rock down here. So I put the rock down, and I started going up the the path. And it was very easy. I walk up the path, arrive on top of the mountain, and I look at this structure. It is round, and a domed roof, and all around are these stained glass windows, like in cathedrals, you know, Gothic type of windows. I went inside, and it's an empty room. There's nothing in it, but the light that shines through these windows is absolutely magnificent. Every color in the rainbow is coming through, and in the middle, the light is pure, bright, clear, transparent, white. It's just pure. And I had attracted to that light, so I walked right to the middle and lie down on the floor, right where the light is converging. And all of a sudden, slowly, I felt the light was lifting me up until I was suspended halfway in the room with the light going through me, around me. I was part of it. So, and that was the end of the experience, and I have no idea what to make out of it. I thought it was great painting material, and that was years ago. I don't know when that was that happened, and I'm still thinking about it. And I just wanted to know now, where did this come from? What was at work? You know, what happened? And that's what led me to first understand, trying to figure out what is consciousness. And that led me a little bit into psychology. So I thought I would. I did a graph on your handout. But for the sake of time, I simplified it and took only a part of it. This is the one you have in there. Mm-hmm. And I took it from a book by an Italian psychiatrist, Saggioli. But I thought I would just do a different graph that's easier to understand. What is consciousness? Essentially, consciousness is awareness. And there is awareness at many levels. We live in a world that has a physical reality and non-physical realities. If you think of our conscious self, the way we are right now here, as an island sticking out of the ocean, and then you think of the ocean, the level of the water, everything above water of the island would be our conscious self, who we are right now, the me right now talking. Anything below water, the non-physical dimensions of reality, the first, below the water, you would have our subconscious. And below the subconscious is the superconscious. The two combined are our personal unconscious, and each one has his own. And below that, you look at the collective unconscious, which is a bit the shared unconscious from all of humanity that preceded us. And the subconscious acts as a translator between the conscious and everything else. And it uses symbols to talk to us. And when Spencer Sherman, our teacher, took us on a guided meditation, he told us, I'm going to take you to the superconscious. And the superconscious, he said, it's everything that our potential is, that the unrealized potential, what we can be but haven't yet achieved. And it wants to happen. And whenever we invite guidance, it will speak to us and guide us in how to reach this maximum potential. And the subconscious, the translator, will use symbols from our personal life that are meaningful to us only, from our cultural background, but also from universal, the myth symbols that we find in the collective unconscious. So these are the mixtures that you see. When I had my experience, for instance, the very first one in the desert, I see a rock and there's a blanket. The blanket, to me, is my symbol for meditating because I wrap myself in the blanket in the morning. My temperature drops and I get shivering and I like to be cozy. So that was my symbol. When I came to the body of water, and I started walking across it. That is a symbol for crossing from here, from above the water, from the island here, into the subconscious below. So you're walking into the subconscious. The reason I could have swam, I could have taken a boat, but I was surprised that I walked, and I realized there's a connection with the blanket around me. I felt safe. It meditation gives me the courage to walk into unknown waters. That's what it meant. And when I decided to go with the nausea, I was in fact walking on water. I decided just to go for it. You know, whatever's going to happen is going to happen. I felt safe because it was part of meditating. So then that's about it for that. I think I'll skip this until maybe later on it maybe come up. What is the superconscious trying to tell you or us? What did it tell me with this walk going down into the cave, back up, the darn rock? What was the meaning? Well, I connected it when Spencer put this one there on board. It absolutely blew my mind. And I was very happy when Bob decided to do this segment, because this is what gave me the courage, despite my fear of speaking, to come up, because I wanted to share this. Now, this is new to me, was new to me, maybe it is not to many of you. And that was the path of transformation. The path of transformation is something that we are called to go through, but many people don't go through. This is the narrow door that Jesus spoke about and that few enter. This is hard work. It hits us about midlife, and things don't sit right, and we start, you know, that's why we're all here, basically. I think there's a reason we all suddenly come here. And this path is omnipresent. It has been spoken about by writers and sages throughout history from every culture. It is not specific to any culture. It has a universal aspect to it. And I'll just go immediately to it. There's a general map. There's a psychological and emotional development follows it too, and so there's spiritual development. The long and the short is, when we start, and by the way, birth mimics it too. The whole birth process, gestation, contractions, and then the delivery. You go through these. We were literally hardwired since birth for this. Unity at first, then we start going through fear and depression spiritually. We become aware of sin, shame, and guilt. Then we try to do something about it. In psychology, it's anger, determination to get out of there. And then in terms of spiritual development, we are also trying really hard to become a good person, becoming what we think we should be, and at the end we suddenly realize it's still not working, and we reach a point where we have our dark night of the soul, where we say, what is it? It is not working. And there's a moment there where we surrender. We say, you know, to God, help me, I don't know anymore. I'm confused, I don't know anymore. And that is the famous leap of faith, I believe, that we talk about. And when we make that leap, we grow in consciousness and we grow in awareness. This is what Ken Wilber was trying to explain through his grasp. It is not a one-time thing. It is a process of many little, where you think you got it figured out, it doesn't work, and then you leap to the next level. So, and then there is rebirth. Thomas Keating would say this is the Garden of Eden. We leave the garden and we develop all kinds of, we try to figure out who we are, what we believe in, and then at some point, if it's not working, we surrender and there's a rebirth. But when I saw that, it really hit me. I said, oh my gosh, Jesus showed us the way. He modeled it for us. He was the major clue to awaken us to this process. Jesus' passion and death is this process, and this is his resurrection. And all those cryptic, to me they were cryptic sayings of his, you got to leave self behind, you have to be like a child. When we are born innocent, pure innocence, and after this journey, if we make it, we are returning to innocence, but with wisdom. In a way, childish to childlike with wisdom. That is what we acquire in this process. So different people have spoken about this. Master Eckhart, he described it in his writings. Alexander Shea, whom some of you might have heard speak at Casa de Maria, I love what he has to say about it. Where is Alexander Shea? Oh, I'm on the path already. See, I forgot some clues there. Oh, well, we'll go back there. So he said, he calls it quadratus, and even relates the four gospels to this. And he said it's omnipresent, and he thinks of it as the breath of God that moves within each person and through all of life. What Thomas Keating says, this journey is what Jesus called the kingdom of God. And it involves the shaking up of our ideas of who we think God is and everything. It really changes the way you read the gospel once you become aware of this. For me, it gave meaning to a lot of things that I didn't understand. And by the way, the gospel speaks to us the same way that the superconscious speaks to us. All those images, there are many ways to understand them. There are different levels. And the levels are revealed to us as we are ready. The same way with the gospel can speak to the six-year-old, but it can speak to a Teilhard de Chardin at a whole different level, and yet it's the same words. So that's, I'm trying to go through this before, what are we doing, time? Okay, I think it's happening. The whole path, stage two and three, is hard work. It doesn't happen overnight. It's definitely something we have want to do. And I want to go through maybe the process. What is the hard work? The hard work, we have all heard that people are saying we are evolving towards the spirituality of the heart. And what does that mean? And I think I'll put this one here. The spirituality of the heart, of evolving towards the heart, has to do with dealing with our ego. I took a class with David Rico. He did a class on shadow, our dark side. And Thomas Keating refers to it as our false self. So different people have different ways of describing, you know, the personal self. I mean, they use different words. What they are talking about is when we are born, we are essentially born pure. Contrary to what we were told, we were not born sinful. So that's a big difference. We were also told that after all these work, we had to die in order to be reborn. We don't have to die. The kingdom is right now. Heaven is to be experienced right now. So that we were missing out on point one and point four, which is the whole point. This is the ultimate, yeah, this is the treasure. This is I call it the all-time treasure hunt. We were denied the treasure. So why would we even go hunting? I mean, literally. So the false self, when you look at the conscious part, the thing, the island that's sticking out of the ocean, when we're born, since we are pure, when we deal just with the life, the conditions, the human condition, life is rough. And the true self is very, very vulnerable, or at least we perceive it as such, and therefore we develop ways to protect it. And depending how severe the trauma was, it can get pretty bad, the way we protect it, and pretty thick layer. So we develop a false self, a self that we think is going to please people around us and be more acceptable. And our job is to literally, as Thomas Keating says, to dismantle it. I did this. This is my little drawing to bring in some Bible quotes when Jesus speaks about the vine has to bear fruit, and if it doesn't, it withers and is thrown away. If we remain anchored strictly in our false self, we are ignoring this enormous treasure that's in store for us, and it will not bear fruit. In order to bear fruit, we have to grow towards the heart, growing towards the heart is the same as coming down this way, and it's the same as growing up that way. So it's a process, down and upward, literally. And how do we get there? That's the key. Well, the active confrontation of the false self would be psychotherapy. Spiritually, would be to develop an attitude, a loving and compassionate attitude towards self and others, and helps us get beyond all the preconceived notions that we have of who we are and who people are. But the passive process to really dismantle the self is meditation. While we meditate, we kind of let God take charge. We get out of the way. We let the left brain, the false self, sit for a while, for 20 minutes, and we let the divine therapist, as Thomas Keating says, get to work. And literally he chips away at this barrier, the barrier between us and who we could be, and chips away at it, and that's why I put the dotted lines here. I think when I had my nauseous experience, I think he chipped off a little block. That was a little block being chipped off. But in my adventure in consciousness, when I came down to the river, I believe the river is on my personal history. And that river was littered with rocks. I believe those are all my rocks that I have to carry out. I have to bring them up to the surface. In our little flyer we had a couple of weeks ago, that beautiful little flyer, it said how to deal with it. It said face it, talk to it, and be it. And that's what happened to me. I didn't know that at the time, but I did that. I faced the nausea, I talked to it during the day, and then I became it, and it went away. So the idea is to carry all these rocks up from our subconscious to the surface, and they dissipate. And when they dissipate, they make room for joy. And once, and everything else is activated, it happens on many levels. The famous perspective that, Ken Wilber says, that the widening perspective happens automatically as we deal with our rocks. It just happens. And the beauty about meditation is, you know, first, it's cheaper than psychotherapy, and you're dealing with a divine therapist, and I think that's pretty marvelous. That's pretty marvelous. So voila, I think that covers the false self. I tried to give you quotes from various people, from different cultures, different religions, and different eras of history to show that it's a universal process. It is not tied to a specific religion, and we are all offered the opportunity to go through it. The kingdom is available to everybody. It's there for all of us. And so, I don't know, Théa de Chardin, union with Christ implies the radical sacrifice of egoism. Joy is the infallible evidence of the presence of God. So he says it must be true, I think. A few from the Bible. If anyone would be a follower of mine, Matthew 16:24, they must leave self behind. This is the false self we have to leave behind and integrate it. We don't throw it anywhere. We kind of take it on like a child that wasn't behaving for a while, and we learn to love it and accept it. And let's see. The next thing I would like to talk about is, I haven't talked too much about God. God, if you want to put it in context, is everywhere. Just like last week Ray said on the blackboard, it was here. God is everywhere. God is with us right here, constantly nagging us to look for more. This is the desire that brought us all here. But also, if we are willing to face our subconscious, and take this little trance, this is a good little trance, doesn't hurt anyone. We learn on how to do this, and we find out that we are being guided by God through the whole process. Once we consent and commit to the journey, it's amazing. You will find out that this, You get these insights. You have synchronicity happening galore. It just happens. It comes to you from left and from right. And you're not alone on this journey. I believe that the deer was the symbol of that. The deer came and sat next to me and licked my wounds and told me, basically, don't worry, that old rock, we're going to do this together. And the comforting presence was to tell me I'm there, but even if it walks away, you remember that deer. It's not going to leave you. So that could be a symbol for God being with us through the journey. Could be a symbol for our guardian angel or the spirit of a loved one who passed away and is going to be with us to support us. So voila, I wanted to say that how does God work through all this? And I heard this at church one day, and it kind of, again, was a big aha moment. It was John 16, page 23. Jesus said to his disciples, "I have much more to tell you, but you cannot bear it now. But when he comes, the Spirit of truth, he will guide you to all truth." And I thought, oh, that was just to me a big clue, a major clue. I realized God speaks to us in clues, individually and collectively. Once we consent to go on the journey, he will feed us clues at such a speed we won't believe it. It just happens. But they come to us as we are ready for them. And this journey into consciousness were just a bunch of clues to tell me how this is going to happen. And it took me 3 years to figure out some of it, and I'm sure it's going to continue to talk to me as I get more and more ready. So God reveals himself not just individually. I believe that he reveals himself collectively to humanity as a whole. And when we see how science is suddenly running into physics, physics is running into spirituality, there's an interconnectedness becoming very evident between all the fields of knowledge, all of which God gave us to help us get there and make it more and more meaningful. It's a collective treasure hunt. And I believe the emerging church is literally our collective looking for more. We are aware there has to be more to it. The beliefs haven't satisfied this yearning that comes from this literally hardwiring within us. God hardwired us for transcendence, and we are yearning for it. And the community of the faithful is looking for it. They may not know exactly where, but they are looking for it, and it's happening. Now, where's the institution in all this? Well, it's struggling. The institution has to go through its own little ego-to-heart process of transformation. It is still stuck in the idea that we are little sinners who need to be guided by the hand. And slowly it needs to deal with its own ego and assist us in our journey rather than hamper us. Use of fear effectively traps us here, prevents the very journey for which we are born and that God wants us to do. So we somehow, the church will have to get on the wagon or it's going to be left behind. And that's basically, I think that's it. So.